How do you actually decide if a practice is worth buying? What are the key factors to consider before making a purchase? Before even considering the aesthetics or the look of the office, you need to look at the business. In order to evaluate a business, you need to look at the numbers behind that business. Today, we're going to look at the key three documents that you need from a seller and how to look at those three documents to determine if a practice is worth buying. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist who's owned multiple businesses, and I help dentists buy practices. Stick around because by the end, you are not only going to know how to buy a dental practice, but how to buy the right practice. You want to make sure you're doing this right. Buying a dental practice is going to be one of the most expensive purchases you're ever going to make, and it is probably the one decision that's going to have the biggest impact on your financial future that you could possibly make. I've taken the complex process of evaluating a practice and tried to simplify it down into a PDF document that you can download for free at my website. It's going to go into more detail than we're able to here, and it's also going to give you examples and concrete numbers that you can look at as you evaluate practices. The practice evaluation checklist is available as a free download at practiceown.com. That's practiceown.com. I'll also put a link to it in the description. I recommend you download it and you can follow along as you watch or listen to this. Have this document available so that next time a practice comes along, you can go back and reference the document to determine if this is a practice that you want to buy. All right, so let's get started on the three documents and pieces of information that you're going to need when initially evaluating a practice. Now, the first and most important document that you're going to come across when you're looking at buying practices is going to be the profit and loss statement. Put simply, a profit and loss statement is a document that shows for a given period of time how much money was made, how much money was spent, and what was the profit from that. Generally, when buying a dental practice, you're going to want to get this information in some sort of standardized format. Generally, we put it in a one-year time period, and you want to look at the last 3 to 4 years, ideally, for this practice that you're looking at. So the key components of a profit and loss statement, or P&L, are gross revenue, operating expenses, and net income. Gross revenue is just all the money that's coming into the practice. In a dental practice, that's primarily going to be from patients paying for procedures and from dental insurance companies. Expenses are going to include payroll, rent, lab fees, supplies, administrative costs, etc. And once you subtract all those expenses from your gross revenue, you're then going to have your net profit. Net profit is the amount of money that the business owner gets to keep for owning the business. Now, in real life, a lot of dentists have various strategies that they use to try to pay less in taxes, and this sometimes results in the profit and loss statement getting a little bit messy. Sometimes certain dentists will, for instance, pay themselves a salary, and that will be included in expenses, and then they'll have an extra amount that they make in profit. And so when you look at the profit and loss statement, you're going to have to go through and you're going to have to add back in some of the owner's personal expenses that they've put as expenses so that you can get a good idea of what the actual profit of this practice is like. For instance, maybe a dentist went on a vacation and did some CE while they were on that vacation, and they included that as an expense for the business, when in reality, that was not. They may have done some of these things for tax purposes, but you want to make sure you add those back in to the profit so that you get an accurate picture of the actual profit that this practice had been receiving. The profit and loss statement is useful in that it shows you the general trends that this practice has had over the last few years. It helps you to understand what kind of income you can generally expect from this practice and what kind of expenses you can expect from this practice. Read properly, it can help you understand where the majority of the expenses are going in this practice, and it can give you a benchmark of the financial health of the business. In the practice evaluation checklist, I've included a sample P&L that will show you some industry standards for some of the various expenses like staff payroll and rent and lab costs and supplies, things like that that are kind of generally standardized across the industry. Now, there's going to be lots of different exceptions. If it's a practice that uses CERAC, there's going to be a lower lab fee, but there's going to be higher equipment costs, etc. But this gives you a general idea of what some of the industry average are. So I recommend you download that PDF when you follow along with this video or podcast. Overall, the P&L is useful because it helps you forecast what the future profitability of this practice is likely going going to look like. You want to make sure that when you're looking at a practice, you understand how to read the profit and loss statement. Ideally, try to look at as many different practices as you can so you can get experience looking at lots and lots and lots of different P&Ls so that when you come across a practice that is the one that you want to buy, the one you want to go forward with, you've already had experience looking at multiple practices and understanding these numbers and seeing how different numbers do these types of reports differently. Because different practices are going to have different ways of running the business. Different accountants are going to have different strategies that they use for optimizing taxes for the selling dentist. And so you want to understand how these documents work, and you want to see multiple different versions of these documents from different locations so that you can get a broad understanding of the topic. Now, hands down, the most important number on the profit and loss statement is the total revenue. It's important to recognize that the expenses of the business are generally easy modifiable by the buying dentist. Things like lab costs and marketing expense and supply costs, etc., those are all determined by how the previous dentist had been running the business. When you come in, you can bring in smarter practices. You can do things new, better ways where you can lower those costs down. So I wouldn't focus on the expenses too much. The only two expenses that you really want to look at when you're looking at a P&L is going to be the payroll expense and the cost for rent or the mortgage expense for the actual facility. While over time you can get those staff costs under control, you're not going to want to come in when you first buy this practice and lower people's salaries, because they're not going to take that and they're just going to leave. And you want to try to keep as many of those staff as possible during the transition. Your goal is to get staff costs to be 25 to 30% of your total revenue. If you are looking at a practice where the staff costs are significantly higher than that, it definitely can pose some significant problems. However, generally the best way to lower the cost of your staff is not going to be by lowering their salaries. The best way to get your payroll overhead under control is going to be to increase your production. While the total cost of your payroll is likely going to stay the same, if you increase your production as a percentage, that number is going to become lower and lower. You just want to get more efficient where you can use the staff that are already at that practice. What you want to do is keep the number of staff that you have, but try to grow the business without having to add more team members right away. This is a theme you're going to see when looking at dental practices. The best thing you can do is almost always to raise revenue. It just makes everything easier. The second cost to look at is going to be the rent or the mortgage on the building, because that's generally a number that is not going to be able to be modified. When you first take over a practice, you're going to want to stay in that building at least for a few years, because you don't want to move right away, because then the patients are going to be confused. You want to make sure the patients have built a relationship with you before you try to move to a different office. So you're going to have to stay in that building at least for a while. Ideally, you don't want to pay more than 5% for rent, although sometimes that number can go up to 10%. But if you're paying more than 10%, that's too expensive. With that being said, though, don't not buy a practice because the rent percentage is more than 10%, because oftentimes, once again, if you increase the revenue that you're generating at this practice, that percentage is going to go down. Rent is generally not going to increase as you increase the size of your business. Rent's going to stay the same. If the selling dentist is producing $500,000 a year and rent is 10% of his production, if you come in and produce $1 million, now rent's only going to be 5%. So increasing revenue is always going to be your best bet. All right, so now that we got expenses out of the way, the most important thing to look at on a P&L is the revenue. The revenue a practice is generating is the best indicator of that practice's size. When you buy a dental practice, the most important thing you can know about that practice is what the size of this practice is. Before even beginning to look at a practice, you want to come up with a strategy of what type of practice you want to run. I personally like to group practices into three categories: small practices, medium practices, and large practices. Small practices are those that are producing under 600,000, medium is 600 to 1.2 million, and large is 1.2 million plus per year. When you're looking at small practices to buy, your goal is going to be come in, buy the practice on the cheap, and then grow it. grow the business. You're not going to be making as much initially in revenue due to the fact that there are not as many patients and not as much work as you need at that practice. But then as you grow the practice, you're later going to have an asset that you can sell. You're building equity in a business. You might buy a practice that's doing $500,000 a year. You might buy it for $200,000 or something. And then if you grow that practice to a practice that's doing $1.2, $1.3 million, you might be able to sell that practice for 100% of production. So you might be able to sell it for $1.2 million. So there's a situation in which you buy a practice for $200,000 and 2 or 3 years later, you've grown it up and then you resell it to someone else and you just made $1 million. Now, growing a practice that's producing $500,000 to $1.2 million is not necessarily going to be easy, but it's definitely possible. The reason why it's so easy to build equity in smaller practices like this is generally small practices sell for a lower percentage of production, which means you can buy a practice that's doing $500,000 for something like $200,000 to $300,000. But if you buy a practice that's doing $1 million, that's going to generally sell for closer to 100% of production. So you might pay $1 million for $1 million practice, but you might only pay $200,000 for a $500,000 practice. And so there's a huge potential to where if you can buy a $500,000 practice for $200,000, grow it to $1 million, and then sell it for $1 million, you just made $800,000 in profit. With that being said, though, generally, if you're a solo dentist, your best bet is going to be to find a medium-sized practice. And that's the reason why medium-sized practices generally sell for a higher percentage of production than the smaller ones, is because when you come into a medium practice and start working, you're generally going to have enough patients to start making a pretty decent income on day one. So a medium-sized practice, one that's producing between $600,000 to $1 million to $1.2 million a year in production, is the ideal practice to buy if you are a solo doctor. Oftentimes with practices in this size, you can come in and produce $1 million a year, have something like a 60% overhead, which leaves 40% for you. That's $400,000 a year. This is going to be the most straightforward and easiest way to make a decent income as a dentist. It's not going to require you to spend a lot of time or energy on marketing because the practice is already at a good size. You're coming in, there's already plenty of patients on the schedule. You already have a full hygienist schedule, if not two hygienists that are filled. You have a decent number of patients, you have treatment to do. You come in, you get to work, and you start making money on day one. The downside with these types of practices is that because they are more in demand, you're generally going to pay a higher price for practices in this range. Luckily, you're going to find a bank that's going to finance 100% of this purchase price, if not more, so that as you work and you're making, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 a year, it's easy to spend the $50,000 or $60,000 a year to pay back that loan. Now, the final category is large practices. Those are the ones producing $1.2 million plus per year. These types of practices, they're going to have to be run as a group practice. You're going to have associate dentists that are working at that practice alongside you. Maybe the selling dentist wants to stay on for a while. You can keep that selling dentist on until you find an associate, but you're going to need to keep in mind trying to produce more than $1.2 million per year as a solo dentist is going to be exhausting and you're going to get burnt out most likely. I do know some dentists that by themselves produce more than $2 million a year, but the vast majority of dentists are not going to want to be working that hard. So only look at larger practices if you're serious about the business side of things, hiring employees. If you like managing people, this could be a good opportunity for you to make a lot of money as a manager. Some of the richest dentists that I know have very large practices that are doing $5 million plus per year, but they're only able to do this because they're good at managing people. The dentistry is still going to be very important, but a large portion of your time is going to be spent on managing people. So you just need to decide what type of practice do you want to buy. Are you a solo dentist who wants to come in and start making money right away? Well, then you need to be looking for a medium-sized practice. Do you have visions of being a managerial type dentist who has multiple dentists working for you as associates? Well, then start looking at larger practices. Or are you the type of dentist who likes the idea of finding a smaller practice and growing it and then selling that at a profit? If so, you should start looking at smaller practices. The profit and loss statement is going to be the most important document you can look at to determine if a practice meets the criteria of what you're looking for. Now, later on in the process, once we get to due diligence, that's where we're going to also be looking at the tax returns of the selling dentist and a bunch of other documents to verify that the things contained in this profit and loss statement are true. But at this stage in the process, I would just assume that everything's reasonably true in the profit and loss statement so that you can move on to the next steps. You are going to come back and verify those numbers later if you decide to go forward and buy this practice. All right, so we're going to briefly go through a profit and loss statement. This is just an example. In real life, profit and loss statements are generally going to be a lot more complicated than this. I have categorized things according to some simple categories to make it easier to read, but in real life, you're probably going to have to add some numbers together, subtract some things, and do some math to put things into the proper categories. Because like we discussed, a lot of times taxes get in the way, and the dentist will sometimes put things into weird categories and do things for tax purposes that make it more difficult for you as a buyer to actually evaluate this practice. Generally, for tax strategies, your goal is going to be making the income number as low as possible because taxes are going to be based on that income number. So dentists try to lower that as much as possible. Once you go back and add things to that income number, sometimes they're making a lot more money than they're trying to let the government believe they are. That's just how it works. So you're going to have to do some math. But this is a simplified example we're going to go through to see some various categories. So right off the bat, in this practice, we have a practice that's doing about $850,000 in total revenue. This is a really good size of practice to buy if you're a solo dentist who wants to start out working 4 days a week and wants to have a decent income. I would be looking for a practice about this size. It's about perfect. Now, in this case, staff salaries are $235,000 a year. That comes out to 25% of revenue. That's decent. Dental supplies, $54,000. That comes out to about 6%. And that's reasonable. I think you can probably get that number lower, but at some point, it's not worth it. I actually worked with a hygienist one time who worked with a dentist who would limit the amount of pieces of gauze they were allowed to use on patients. I mean, come on, you're saving like 50 cents per patient, but you're making your hygienist job so much harder and the patient's getting worse treatment. Like, I wouldn't worry too much about dental supplies. Focus on your revenue. Lab fees, you know, $65,000 in lab fees, it's 7.5%. That's reasonable. It's going to change based on if you're the type who's doing digital scans or physical impressions, if you have a CRAC or not. Things like that are going to adjust that, but that's kind of a reasonable amount. Equipment costs, $30,000. You know, equipment costs are kind of variable because a lot of times you'll have a lot of costs up front and then you'll go multiple years with very minimal costs. It's hard to look at just 1 year to say whether equipment cost is good or bad because you really have to look at an average over multiple years. When you are buying the dental practice, you're going to want to assess the quality and the condition of the equipment you're looking at to get an idea of when you're going to have to replace things. If you buy an office with brand new equipment that's recently been replaced, likely you're not going to have a huge equipment expense starting out. But if you buy a practice that's older and things are starting to fall apart, there's a chance that you're going to have a pretty big equipment cost up front. Sometimes with profit and loss statements and tax statements and stuff, they will amortize equipment expense out over time. And this can be useful for tax purposes, but in real life, you want to actually know for cash flow purposes how much you're going to be spending. Maybe you get a loan for some of the equipment costs, and that helps you spread it out for cash flow reasons, but then you're paying for interest. So, you know, equipment's going to be very variable. Just take a look and try to look at previous years and look at the condition of the equipment. Marketing and advertising, $25,000. That's reasonable. You want to determine what type of marketing the previous dentist was doing. If it's a practice that's in a growth stage, it's not uncommon to spend substantially more than that in marketing. If it's a practice that's just kind of coasting, that already has enough patients, a lot of dentists don't spend anything in marketing. Honestly, I spent $0 in marketing when I owned my practice because I already had enough patients. I didn't need to spend money in marketing. If you buy the right practice, you probably are not even going to need to market for the first few years because you're going to be focusing on completing the treatment that you already have with the existing patients. Administrative costs, $20,000. That's fine. It depends on what that is. You're just going to have to look into that. Miscellaneous costs, $18,000. You know, there's going to be all sorts of expenses that are just come along. You know, maybe you need to repaint the walls. Maybe you need to replace replace the carpet, there's going to be miscellaneous expenses that come along. Some of that might be included in facility costs. If you're paying rent, you know, maybe you can get your landlord to pay for some of these things. But when you own a business, there's going to be some miscellaneous expenses. And each year, those are going to be different. So you're just going to have to kind of look at an average over the last few years. Overall, that resulted in a net income of $348,000. That's pretty reasonable. I think this is a decent example of a practice. These are the type of numbers you can expect when owning a practice. If you come in and increase revenue from $850,000 to $1,000,000 without significantly raising expenses, you could easily add on an extra $100,000 to your total income there and walk away with $450,000. So you just want to get comfortable looking at profit and loss statements. This is just an example of kind of an ideal practice. Most practices are going to have some issues, but remember, you don't have to have the exact same expenses that the selling dentist had. You're going to be able to redo this business the way that you want to do it and have the types of expenses that you want to have. And so look at the staff expenses, look at the rent expenses, but the rest of the expenses I wouldn't worry too much about. Look at the revenue. Revenue is the most important. All right, the second thing that you're going to want to know about a practice before you buy it is how many patients are at the practice. What is the active patient count? Now, in order to find the active patient count for a dental office, you're going to have to go about this a few different ways. Some practice management softwares will actually export a document called the active patient count, and that can actually be pretty helpful. It gives you a very good idea, but you want to actually verify what those numbers mean and what they are. Sometimes a practice broker will just say, well, the active patient count is blank, and they don't really give you a reason how they came up with that number. So you want to verify that that number is actually accurate. The number of patients that are at a practice is the number one determinant of what the revenue of that practice is going to look like. You want to make sure that this practice has a healthy, active patient base that's growing over time. You want to make sure that the hygiene schedules are full and that there's plenty of patients available on the schedule when you walk in so that you can find treatment and get to work. The higher the active patient count, the more valuable that practice is going to be to you. Typically, an active patient is going to be someone who's had treatment or been in for a cleaning within the last 18 to 24 months. Sometimes patients will come that haven't been in within a few years, but for the most part, your active patients are going to have been seen within the last 18 to 24 months. So there's a few different ways that you can estimate the active patient count. The first way is going to be ask the seller if they can export a report from their practice management software. Some softwares have this, and you still need to verify that report is accurate, but it's going to give you some data that you can dive into and look and see how many active patients there are. Number two is going to be looking at the schedule. Ideally, you want to log into the dentist's computer and see their charts, and you want to look back over the last year and see what kind of patients was this dentist seeing. You find a month, and you go through and you count how many patients came in that month, and then you just multiply that by 12. There's lots of ways, but if you look at this schedule, you can get an idea. And then you want to look forward, and you want to see how many patients are scheduled for their hygiene recalls. Patients that are on the hygiene recall schedule, those are going to be your most valuable patients. Those are the patients that are going to be returning that you're going to be seeing when you buy this practice. So you want to make sure that the future hygiene schedules are filled with patients. Generally, practices that have well-managed hygiene schedules are going to be the types of practices that have lots of patients. You can also get a decent estimate of active patients based on how many hygienists are at the practice and how many days those hygienists are working. A full-time hygienist is generally able to service something like 800 to 1,000 patients. So if a practice has one full-time hygienist and one part-time hygienist, you might be able to estimate, well, the full-time hygienist is probably seeing about 1,000 patients and the part-time is probably seeing 400 patients. So this practice probably has something like 1,400 patients. The practice has two hygienists and both of those hygienist schedules are filled, then you can estimate, well, this practice is probably has active patient base of 1,600 to 2,000. Finally, if you can find any information on the patient retention rates at a practice, for instance, how many patients are rescheduled, then that can also be an indicator of the health of this practice. When you become an owner and when you take over a practice, probably the number one metric that you're going to want to focus on growing is your patient retention rate. You want to make sure that the patients you have are staying and are rescheduling and are coming back for treatment. So if the previous dentist is doing anything to track patient retention rates, that's a very good sign. Now, there are some red flags to look at when buying a practice. Number one is going to be inconsistent patient flow. If you look back at 1 month and there's a decent amount of patients, but then the month before that, the schedule is almost empty, that's something to worry about. Make sure that you're looking at the schedule at multiple months, different times of the year, over the last year, looking over the next 6 months, how many patients are scheduled. Don't just look at 1 week and say, well, this week is full. Especially if the practice broker is showing you through the computers, they might cherry pick and find a certain week that looks great. You want to make sure you're looking at all the weeks to make sure that the schedule is actually consistent. Another trap that a lot of dentists seem to fall into is looking too much at new patient count. Some dentists focus way too much on new patient numbers. Of course, every practice is going to have new patients, and you need new patients in order to continually grow your practice. However, if a practice is too reliant on new patients, sometimes that means that they're not doing a good job at retaining the patients that they already have. You want to try to find a practice that's spending very little on marketing and doing very little effort to bring in new patients, because that's something that when you come in, you can start doing some marketing and you can start bringing in new patients. You want to find ways that you can grow the practice. If the dentist that's there is already working super hard to do marketing and bring in new patients and they're continually losing patients, that's not a good sign. So overall, second only to revenue, active patient count is the second most important number that you're going to need to know when you're trying to evaluate whether a dental practice is worth buying. A profitable solo dentist is generally going to need to have between 1,200 and 2,000 active patients. This kind of range is enough to make sure that you're having enough treatment to keep your schedule busy and also enough to keep 1 to 2 hygienist schedules filled. If you're trying to build a group practice where you have associate dentists working for you, obviously you're going to need even more active patients. But as a solo dentist, you want to have somewhere in the range between 1,200 and 2,000 patients. All right, the third document that you want to look at when you're buying a practice is going to be the income by procedures report. This is a document that practice brokers don't always give you right away that you have to ask for. If you're not a dentist or an office manager, you might not really understand what you're looking at on one of these documents. While some of the other documents like the P&L might be able to be understood by an accountant or a lawyer, when you're looking at the income by procedure report, this is something that only a dentist is really going to fully understand. So you personally need to make sure that you are looking very hard at this report. The income by procedure report provides critical insight into exactly what type of procedures were being done by the selling dentist. This report will help you understand the practice's profitability and where that money is coming from. Ideally, you want to try to get the last few years of these reports so you can see if things have changed. And there are a few red flags that you want to look out for when you are looking at these types of reports. Ideally, you want to find a dentist that has been slowing down clinically in the last few years. There are two primary reasons that dentists will sell practices. The first reason, and this can be dangerous for the buyer, is that the dentist is trying to make a profit. If the dentist over the last year has dramatically increased the amount of crowns or other types of procedures that they were doing, this can be a bad sign. Sometimes a dentist will increase what they're doing to try to make that last little bit of money before they retire and then try to increase the value of the practice that they sell. Some practice brokers will actually come in and recommend to the selling dentist, try to treatment plan as much as you can over the next 6 to 12 months so that you can sell this practice for twice of what you would be able to sell otherwise. And that can be dangerous because what will happen is you as a buyer will come in and a lot of the patients have just been treatment planned like crazy and they don't have any work that needs done. And some patients are going to be upset because the dentist leaving just did a bunch of work and then just left. That can be kind of dangerous and kind of risky for you. So you want to make sure that you're buying from a dentist that ideally has been slowing down towards retirement. Some of the most profitable acquisitions I've seen are where the previous dentist had been slowing down and hadn't been treatment planning and maybe his vision had been getting a little bad and maybe the x-ray machines weren't really working, so the dentist hadn't really been taking that many x-rays. And at first glance, you might say, well, oh, that's not a good sign that production had decreased over the last few years. But the key is if you can find a practice where the active patient count had not decreased, but production has decreased, that's a very good sign because that means that the practice still has a lot of patients, but the patients have work that needs done. So when you're looking at this income by procedure report, go through and look at how many crowns the dentist has recently done, how many large fillings versus small fillings. If the dentist is doing a lot of MODBL amalgam restorations, that's a great great sign, because those teeth are likely going to need crowns soon. Those teeth are going to break. They're going to fracture. There's going to be recurrent decay, and you're going to be able to come in and do crowns on those teeth, which is a much higher procedure than just doing a filling. I like to go through and add up all the large fillings, three surfaces or more, and then compare those to all the crowns added together. And this will give you a ratio of large fillings to crowns. A high filling to crown ratio is a good sign, because that means that there's going to be more crowns needed when you take over the practice. If the dentist had been doing a lot of crowns, which means a low filling to crown ratio, that's a bad sign, because possibly the dentist had been over treatment planning crowns, and you're going to come in and there's not going to be enough work for you. Now, another reason you want this income by procedure report is going to be so you can look at the hygiene schedule. Looking at this report is going to be one of the easiest ways to determine the active patient count, because you can see how many patients came in for exams, how many patients came in for cleanings. You can look at scalings. You know, is the dentist doing scalings, or have they only been doing prophys? Because that's a huge growth right there. If some patients need scalings. Ideally, you want to find a practice that in the most recent years has a much higher percentage of hygiene production than doctor production. If you can find a practice where 30, 40% of the income is coming from the hygiene department, and you know a smaller percentage is coming from the dentist doing work, that is a great sign, because that means that there's going to be work that's going to need done when you start out. However, if you come in and the hygiene section is small, let's say 10%, and 90% of the work is coming from the dentist doing a bunch of crowns and fillings and Invisalign right before he retires, that's a bad sign. And then finally, when you're looking at these reports, you want to get an idea of how many specialty procedures is this dentist doing. Are there certain procedures that the dentist has been referring out that you can do? Because right off the bat, that's a way to increase production. Or are there some things that this dentist has been doing a lot of that you don't either feel comfortable doing or just don't want to do and don't want to learn how to do, because that can be a bad sign, because you're going to lose the production from those procedures. If the dentist, for instance, has been doing a lot of root canals and you don't like doing root canals, that can be a bad sign. If, however, the dentist hasn't been doing any Invisalign and you like to do Invisalign and clear aligners, then that's a huge profit increase right there. So make sure that you're carefully reviewing this income by procedure report. Finally, another reason that I love this income per procedure report is you can get an idea of how much money the dentist is making per procedure. You can get an idea of what he's charging for various procedures, and this is a good way to really get a good understanding of what's actually happening in the practice. So overall, if I could only have one document to evaluate a practice, this would be the document I would ask for, the income by procedure report. Because if you get income by procedure for an entire year, right off the bat, you're going to have what's the production for the year. You're going to have the procedure mixes. You're going to have an idea of how many hygiene patients there are, so you can estimate the active patient number. Really, all of the numbers we've talked about so far can be figured out or deduced by looking at this income per procedure report. So this is the most important report to get. And oftentimes, this is not one that the practice broker is going to immediately give you. You're going to have to ask for this, but absolutely, when you're evaluating practice, you need to get this income by procedure report. So now I'm going to show you an example of what an income per procedure report looks like. Once again, this example is going to be very simplified. I've grouped things into categories. Oftentimes, when a practice management spits this information out, it's going to be grouped by ADA codes. And as you know, there's hundreds of codes. So you're going to have to do some math to add some things together. But this is a simplified version that I'm going to show you to get you an idea of what you're looking for. All right, so with this example, we have exams, and here I have them grouped new and recall. Obviously, in real life, you're going to have comp exams, you're going to have limited exams, and you're going to have your recall exams, and they're going to be in different categories. But here I'm grouping them together, and there's 2,000. Total income was $200,000, and income per procedure was $100. And we don't have x-rays listed, so for this example, I'm going to assume that radiographs are included in that exam. And so if you're including radiographs, about $100 per exam with radiographs, that's probably pretty accurate. Next is going to be hygiene cleanings. 1,800 were done. So right off the bat, you can probably get an idea that this practice probably did 200 limited exams because 1,800 of them also were attached to cleanings, which means they were either new patients or recall patients. Fillings, 800 composites. Now, in this example that I have, we don't have large composites separated from smaller composites, which is something you'd want to look at on an actual report, but this is just an example. So there's 800 crowns, they did 350. Average income was 1,200 per crown. Now, here we have 800 fillings to 350 crowns. While 350 crowns is fairly high number, ideally you'd want to find lower than that, but this is actually a pretty good ratio because that means even though the dentist has been doing quite a few crowns, he's doing a lot more composites, which is a good sign because a certain percentage of those composites are going to become crowns. So this is actually a pretty favorable ratio. It's not an amazing ratio. Ideally, you want to find a dentist that's done, 1,000 fillings and 2 crowns. But, in real life, this is a pretty decent kind of ratio. Root canals, 75. Now, in this report, we're not seeing the difference between anterior and posterior. Obviously, you're going to want to look at that to see if he's referring out the posterior endo and just doing anterior. But in this case, they're added together and 75 root canals. So you want to make sure, are you comfortable doing root canals? 100 extractions. That's not very many for a practice because let's say you do a denture patient and that might be 20 extractions in one day. And so the entire year, they've only done 100 extractions. That's pretty low. If you're looking at a full report, you can look at how many of those were simple extractions, how many were surgical, how many of those were wisdom teeth. Do you feel comfortable doing wisdom teeth? Are you going to refer those out, et cetera? $100,000 of the income from this practice is from implants. So you want to make sure that you know how to do implants if you're going to take over this practice. Now, if you haven't done implants yet, I wouldn't necessarily be afraid to buy this practice because they're honestly easy to learn. You can take a course and learn how to do implants and start doing implants. So I wouldn't run away, but just make sure that you want to do implants because this dentist is doing implants. All right, so I hope that gave you an idea of the three main documents that you want to look at when you're buying a practice. You want to figure out what's the revenue of this practice, what's the size of the practice, and you want to be looking at what kind of active patient count this practice has. And then ultimately, you want to look at the procedure mix and see, is this the type of practice that I want to buy and am I going to be able to continue the procedures that the selling dentist was doing? And has the dentist been doing any type of silly things to try to increase his revenue over the previous years, or has he been slowing down and there's going to be a lot of potential for new patients? These are the kind of things you're looking for. Now, if you want to have this information in a very readable, concise form that you can keep with you and have next time you look at a practice, make sure to go to my website at practiceown.com. I'll also put a link in the description where you can download a checklist that has all this information in an easy-to-read form that you keep with you next time you look at a practice. If you are ready to move forward with the process of buying a practice and you want someone to go along with you and help you through this process, someone who's done it before, that's what I do. I help dentists buy practices. Reach out. You can find my email and the website in the description, practiceown.com. My email is chris@practiceown.com. Reach out. I would love to talk to you. Get out there. Start looking at practices. Find a practice to buy and get started today.